Good morning. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, the 401k and retirement authority. What a week. A lot to cover here today. I'm going to talk about a couple of client cases this week. We're going to talk also about some debt, get out of debt software as well that ties into one of the cases this week. We're going to talk about 10 mistakes you may regret regarding retirement. Talk about where this market's going and what's going on and what we might be facing during the rest of the summer as far as the market goes. And I'm going to talk about self-directed IRAs, probably mostly those involving real estate inside and why you need to be careful or not do it. You're listening to us on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. If you have a question, need some financial help, or just want to join the conversation, phone number is 504-260-0995. We had a bunch of great calls on the week show, and that's the daily wrap. We do that from 7 to 8. I don't think we pulled any of them for today's show, so we're going to go with whoever calls in and joins a conversation, ask some great questions. If you're wanting to reach us, once again, it's 504-260-0995. You can email me, gregory@gregoryricks.com. And you could do what a lot of people are doing is download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Or just call it the Gregory Ricks app, but it'll link you to iHeart Radio, the app. And if you have to get away from your car or the radio in the house, which we refer to as terrestrial, and you want to get on the stream, the iHeart Radio app does that. It links through my app, or you can go download that, and you should download that app anyhow, and then just do a search for WRNO. That'll connect you up with the show. And hey, I listen to it all the time. I like a variety of music, but I've kind of drifted back to country, more of the modern country, like 101.1 plays a lot of the modern country, and we play bits of that mixed in with other music here on our in and outs of the show. So let's see, where will I start today? You know, there's some Social Security stuff to talk about as well regarding adjusted gross income. Let's see. Yeah, you can message us on Facebook as well, Twitter. We kind of do all those things regarding from a social media standpoint. You know, something I addressed last night on the show, so I'm just not going to go to the extent that I did, because really what I did on last night's show, and you can pick that up next week when it's added to iTunes and our website, and I think they loaded the shows on WRNO as well. And it's just, if you don't look at the financial side, and financial was crazy week, but just what happened and is happening in this country, it's kind of scary to be a law enforcement officer. And I don't know, has the country's mindset overall shifted? It just really concerns me. Now, I am an advocate of the Second Amendment. I think that's still a lot to do with why we are a free country and will remain so. And to me, that's just the core of that. Does it mean we have to suffer some other problems? Yes. But still, a human being has to pick up the weapon and use it in the wrong way. And in the crime blotter I read on the show last night, basically was four days out of the week. And what's consistent every day, somebody's raped, somebody's shot, somebody's stabbed, somebody's carjacked. And a lot of stuff happens, or most, during the night. So we've got to be careful about what we're doing, but we've got to change that mindset. Is crime the way to go about things? And if you're dealing with a police officer, you know, one thing you may not realize, it's aggravating as heck, probably. If I get pulled over for speeding, I'm not happy, but I'm not going to show him that unhappiness, and I'll probably be unhappy about getting a couple $100 ticket. But I'm not going to complain to him, because what was I actually doing? Speeding. And maybe I drive excessive speeds most of the time, so if I get one, I deserved it, but I also count it as pretty rare. But when an officer pulls you over, what's his objective from a day of work? It's to get home that night or after his shift. I get up, head to the office. My objective is to get to the office. I leave the office. Objective is to get home. If I get interrupted by being pulled over, I'm going to make sure I'm compliant, not seen as aggressive or reaching for something, because I want to get that couple of minutes of my life over for both him, her, and I, and get on home. The aggravation a pass, the stress a pass. And you think, you know, and we can't keep amping this up. And it's a very hard job that they have. And we really shouldn't take it out on them, because all of us here that lived here during, before Katrina, through it, and after, even though we were away, we saw the chaos that was going on when we didn't have police out in force. It looked like the Wild West down in the CBD downtown area is chaotic, and other parts of the city. And I think a lot of things were happening based on fear as well as opportunity to be up to no good. And criminals, what they're looking for is opportunities. So don't give them the opportunity to take advantage of you. Be aware of everywhere you go. But just like that shows, if we don't have police, yeah, everything's going to go off the rails. It's going to go bad. So we need them. And, you know, on my worst day in what I do, is probably a better day than their good days. Because imagine what they have to deal with. Would you think about it? On their normal days, probably a horrible day for us to have to deal with people doing things they're not supposed to, worrying about pulling somebody over, stopping somebody, questioning somebody, chasing somebody down, knowing they could be shot. They leave home and don't know whether they're going to return. And from a criminal mindset of, you know, I just can't believe why somebody would carjack a car these days. Because I tell you what, I have several vehicles in the family. We know where those vehicles are at all times. You take one of my vehicles, I'll make a phone call and the engine will be turned off on it. Or we're going to know where it is at all times. So why would you steal a car? And to think you're going to get away with it. Or to shoot a cop. You think you're going to get away with it. To rob a store. Cameras are everywhere. You think you're going to get away from it. And the people that should be listening aren't. But I just don't understand that thinking when we have one of the greatest countries on the planet and greatest countries of all time where you can be poor 1 year and a few years later be doing really well, as well as still have the opportunity to get rich beyond your wildest dreams. But you also have the opportunity to stay poor, live poor, and die poor. But that's choices you make. It's not like in China you're tested and, well, you're going to put together iPhones the rest of your life or work in the fields. They just don't have the opportunity, and we have that here, but a large portion of our society decides to sit around and think about how they can steal or plan to rob a Canes. That's never going to have a good outcome. Even if nobody died, it's not a good outcome. They're going to be hunting for you. So you always want to have somebody hunting for you? I really wouldn't. Well, when we come back, we're going to get on to some financial stuff. I just wanted to share my thoughts, and hopefully we can bring our society to a much better place. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. You're listening to us on News Talk Radio 99.5 WRNO. You know, our hearts go out to everyone that lost their lives this past week in these incidents. And my gosh, those officers and the difficult thing they do. You know what? I'm thinking about you and your families. Thoughts and prayers go out to them. It's difficult, and then it's very difficult for those that work with them to have to go back to work that next day. Very tough. You know what my motto is? And this is something when I had a chance a couple years ago to meet George W. Bush and get some and we had a Q&A session, a few of us with him, and got to get his take on a number of things and decisions he made while he was president. But one of the things that was at the core of his philosophy on some of the things we did were going into other countries and things that didn't matter to us. But we would go and help and seek out to protect people. And you can think of a number of things that related to that. But one of the things he shared with us is he developed a philosophy, and that philosophy was that every life matters. So when we were wondering why he did some things that he did and maybe wasn't in any interest of the U.S., and was second guest on it, it really came down to, can we make a difference, help people prevent dying, or help people survive? And I think it's one of the themes that it really comes down to. And yeah, I think every life is important. And I think in the communities and areas where people are doing this to each other, it's not just the cops, policemen against the citizens, and it sure shouldn't be the citizens against them, but we as a country, we as a people, and different parts of the major cities where crime is going, we have too much of this killing each other, robbing each other, And somebody only gets worried about it, it seems, where a cop kills somebody. You know, why don't we get upset about the killing that's gone on in this town the past week, or the carjackings, or the rapes, or the stabbings? There's a crime blotter in The Advocate every day, and that's one of the quick reads I do every morning, is to just see what's going on. Just that vibe of what's going on in the city. It gives you the street, so you kind of know the area where this incident happened. And remember, being out and about late at night, only bad things can happen, I think, because that's when most of the bad stuff really happens. You've got to be vigilant when you're out and about, going places. You go into a parking lot, to go into a store, the mall or whatever. You should scan as you're driving in, scan as you're getting out of the car and walking into the store. That way you know how things look when you come out. Were there people around? And then when you come back out the store, you should do a scan. Has anything changed? Is there different people there? There's cars. Are you still able to back out of the parking place? Is your vehicle still secure as you left it? Because it should have been secured once you step out of it. And when you're getting in your car, you shouldn't sit there and fool with your cell phone or chat or call. You need to get in your car and get moving. You stop at a red light, you need to scan who's pulled up next to you, who's at the corner. When you're pulling into your house, you need to be vigilant and look at that things. Kind of think in a defensive mindset going forward. Help yourself in that case. Okay, we'll move on from that. I'm just worried about everyone out there. Just some crazy, crazy times. One of the things we talked about this week was the state's film tax credits. I had a couple of texts during the week from a caller had called in to the Daily Wrap show that we do 7 o'clock every evening live as well as this show. And the caller was asking about the tax credits, and the state's under review. Governor Jindal had dialed it back some, but there is a 2012 budget project report found that for every dollar the state receives in tax revenue from filmmakers, it's spending $7.29. The budget project report said people are getting rich on this deal, and it's not the Louisiana taxpayers. There's emotion involved in this, as well as those that had texted me with comments about it. And going back to 2002, the tax credit program put the state in, and this was once again created in 2002, the tax credit program put the state in competition with states without offering similar or with offering similar incentives, such as Georgia, and was successful in luring production away from Hollywood. And one of the things getting to, is this going to help us going forward? I see that study, I don't know how far it drills down and what sense it makes for us, but we kind of like to get our money back and see. And I don't know if it was just they were looking at it from the studio level or the jobs and studios and everything that it's created. But we do have to be good stewards of our money that runs the state as well. And typically we set up a business and give them tax credits. It's for them to become self-sustaining at some point. And it doesn't look like that will ever happen from the movie business, because if we don't give them credits, they don't come, period. So all of a sudden, we've got the board lit up with a lot of phone calls here. So let's start with Chef would be the first one, Angie. You can do as Chef did, call 260-0995 to get in the conversation on Winning at Life. Welcome to the show, Chef, from Bywater. Hey. Hey there.
Hey. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, good. I told the screener there we kind of had a little bit of a windfall. My wife and I, we won part of the lottery, not the really big one, but part of it, and so we'll be getting about 1.2 after all is said and done.
Well, congratulations!
Thank you
on that windfall. That's awesome. It's like a lightning strike. You're okay though, aren't you?
Yeah, we're still a little shell shocked, I got to tell you, but we've been fortunate, and we want to try to do some good with the money. Do some stuff for environmental projects here in the state and such. So I'm retired, and my wife is a surgeon at Ochsner. So we were fine before this. We just got just got lucky. We never even really played. had a couple extra bucks when I was at the gas station. But so my question is. A windfall like that, we're talking about, maybe paying off. We purchased a home about a year ago for just under $1 million. Should we just pay that off, or
how much do you owe on the home?
About $780.
Now the 1.1 you have, that's after taxes.
That'll be after taxes. Yeah.
Have you collected it yet?
No, we haven't even, we have to meet with them and they do the picture with the check and all that stuff. We haven't done any of that yet, but our accountant's been in contact with the mega people, and they ran the numbers, we ran the numbers, and it all came out, together. We want to do it anonymously, but apparently you have to at least show up and give your first name and all that, but...
Yeah, that's kind of the rules under the state of Louisiana. They can get you to do that. Not all states are like that.
Yeah, I don't mind. We don't mind paying our fair share. We've gotten a lot of living in the state, in the United States. I mean, we use the roads, the bridges, and the air, and the SEC, and all. So I understand as a person, we got to pay our share.
Yeah,
we're willing to do that. Doesn't make it feel good, but you live in a live in a civilized society. You want to pay for the things you get.
Chef, one of the things I would think about that if you're helping some other family members and such, depending upon what you're giving them, because those gifts can become taxable to you. In doing that, so that makes like double taxation. So some of this is tax planning in advance of taking that on how that should be structured. And you might consider an entity if you're doing that to take the lottery winnings, so you can have that worked out if there's some people you're wanting to help. And outside of that, you can take the assets, but don't be in a rush to figure out what you're wanting to do, because this is just a unbelievable one-time gift that you've gotten, and you want to not regret the decisions, but you also don't want it to be a burden on you as well. So just take your time, look out for who's helping you, and take a pause on decisions. It's kind of advice I give to everybody. And there's another pretty big lottery winner that we've been working with as well. And that's just kind of some of the same advice that we give them.
My wife was joking she was going to retire, but she's pulling in, three quarters. She's pulling about $725 a year. So I said, look, you got, it's a lot of money to walk away from.
Yeah.
And we didn't win all that money. We won a lot, but we didn't win all that.
Money. One of the thing, core things might be to secure that house, pay that off. That's something I would give serious thought to.
Yeah, good. It's good problems to have, I guess.
Yeah.
The thing we've always done, I mean, we've been fortunate when Obama got in, we really, the economy, the market took off. We just did really, really well.
Hey, Chef. We're coming up on a break right here. I've got to jump out of it. But one thing I want to add to what you're talking about, an income, hey, there is some tax strategies that you are in a pretty high tax bracket. That might be something you want to talk to us about, of how to shave that and create more savings. Something we don't talk enough about on the show, but especially high income earners like yourself, there are some ways.
All right, I appreciate the insight.
Thank
you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
Congratulations again, Chef.
Bye-bye.
When we come back from the break, we're going to go to Ed and Matthew. Just hang with us a couple more minutes. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
The contents of this show are meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to take place of your attorney, accountant, tax professional, personal trainer, football coach, interior decorator, or those fortune tellers at Jackson Square. Please consult a financial advisor before making all investment decisions. Now, back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is a registered investment advisory firm. You'd like a copy of Form ADV, it's our full disclosures. Call the office, 504-832-9200, or go to gregoryricks.com. Okay, we've got a couple more callers on the line. We're going to jump to Ed in Waggaman. Ed, welcome to the show, and thanks for that long hold.
Okay, no problem. I just want to get something straight, because I was on a great misunderstanding here, evidently. I talked to you about a year ago. I inherited my mother's IRA, and I would talk to you about instituting the five-year, plan. So anyway, so a year goes by, and I'm waiting for my distribution, to come in, and here it comes, in the mail, and I open it up. And I was really put aback because it wasn't close to what I had said that I wanted it to be to the financial institution. And I had talked to them, to the person that's in charge of their IRA department, like two or three times, and said, look, I want to go under the five-year rule, So I get my paperwork, and I admit that I screwed up because I never read the paperwork before I signed it. I thought that.
So what rule are you under, Ed?
Huh?
Are you under the stretch, is what you're referring to?
Right. Well, that's the thing. They told me that that I can't use the five-year rule because my mother was already, over 70 and a half and was already drawing on this IRA. So they sent me what her normal distribution was, not what I thought I was going to get under the five-year rule, that I wanted to deplete the whole thing over 5 years.
Yeah, let me explain something. This is actually very easy. Now, has she passed more than a year ago?
Yes.
Okay. During the year of death of an IRA owner, you have to do a RMD distribution based on what they would have taken if they were still alive. The year following death, you have an inherited IRA. It's basically her IRA that you inherit. If you're going to take just the RMDs, it would be based upon your age if you're a named beneficiary there. Now, here's the deal. Everybody automatically kind of goes under the stretch, is what that means. But it doesn't prevent you from spending it down over 5 years. Here's the thing. You really don't want to be opted into the 5 year, because then you can't change your mind and go to the stretch. If you're on the stretch, you can spend it down as fast as you want. Or just divide it by 5 years or 60 months, take it out every month or once a year, and spin that account down. It's just, all you've got to do is request that distribution. It's just simple, request it. Hey, I wanted more than this. Call them up and tell them to send you the other portion of the money that you're wanting. You're not locked into some minimum distribution. You could take it all out, cash it all right now. Simple right. Okay. as that.
Okay, well, that's what they explained to me. But like I say, when I had talked to them a year ago, they did, you know, make the my mother's distribution, you know, to me, you know. But then I was under the impression that with under the five-year rule that I would take the rest out in equal amounts,
yeah.
you know, till it was
You just
totally
need to ask for it, Ed. And here's the other thing under the five-year rule. And let's say you didn't take any distributions the first couple of years. Under the five-year rule, you don't have to take any distributions. It just all has to be out by the end of 60 months. So the five-year rule is you're in it no matter what. You can take whatever you want out however often until it's done. Just make okay. the call and tell them, hey, give me my one-fifth that I rest of that balance, and okay. then you're good. Thanks right, for the call, Ed. You have a great weekend.
Right. You too. Bye-bye.
That's a really good call. I'm glad he asked about that because some people, you know, I'd rather be under the stretch and then decide to spend all the money. Easy as that. But, you know, what we like is this money to last a long time. Let's go over to Matthew from Metairie. You can do the same as he did. Pick up the phone. Call us 504-260-0995.
Hey, Greg.
Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Hello, Gregory.
Hey.
So the answer this week, I kind of had a flashback to when the Macondo project blew up, and the fact that those first two videos of those people getting shot, I can just see all the police saying, well, no, wait, hold on. This is not us. This is not what we do. This is not how we behave. And then what happened in Dallas, like, oh, that is not going to help.
Yeah, since you mentioned those two videos, and let's say that would be, you know, there's some advisors that aren't worth a darn. And there's other people or financial salespeople and such that don't do what they're supposed to, and they need to be rooted out and pushed out the business. But all of a sudden, you know, and that's why I always hate seeing something or somebody get charged for stealing from their client. It shouldn't have happened. And that's why I talk about clients should work with a fiduciary and don't give somebody custody. It makes us all look bad.
Like, yeah.
And that's what happens in that. You know, all these officers across the country and security guards carry weapons. You know, I don't know what the number is, but it's a pretty big number.
Yeah,
and you know what? I
can
just tell you, it's a gun. It's just like I read in the paper the other day, this dad and son was at a shooting range, and a round that was ejected casing hit the wall, bounced back to him in his shirt. I guess it was burning him because those casings are pretty hot after fired. And somehow he was reaching to try to get that out of his shirt, shot and killed his son. Totally an accident. Horrible, horrible
yeah.
accident, but was an accident. So are things going to happen out of our control? Maybe the officer a little anxious, but you know what he is? He's scared in some way. And does that mean we've got to go crazy around the country? No, but what we've got to do is improve, work to where that doesn't ever happen by an officer. You know, it goes back to, what was it, Black Hawk Down. Well, favorite war picture, and, you know, and I was talking with somebody the other day about that, and there was a ranger that was...
Hello?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So there was a ranger there that was actually there in Mogadishu involved in that and said the movie was pretty accurate, but I remember one scene when the militia in that town, Mogadishu, started firing at them, and they looked at Sergeant, well, do we fire back? He says, are they shooting at you? Yeah, return fire then. So we got to be careful about when things are done, and always need to be better training. And so maybe we can one day get this down to where if an officer shoots somebody, maybe it is because they were being shot at a couple times. Hard to judge what they do, but all of this has gotten out of hand, and accidents do happen, but it doesn't make every policeman bad. And if we would think more about all the killings that are going on, not just get upset because a cop kills somebody. It happens every week in our city, happens every week in Chicago, maybe not in Waco or other communities, but these big cities, way too much crime. Thanks for the call, Matthew.
No.
Gets me going on this. And if we could stop shooting each other, I think that, why aren't we upset about that, about the five people killed last week in New Orleans? Unbelievable. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekend edition. Because we do the weeknight show every night, I almost want to say the daily wrap. But, hey, this is the week wrap here as the show goes. You're listening to us on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Been doing this for over 6 years now. Unbelievable. I have people ask me, well, how do you do this? You run a business during the day, you take care of clients, manage money, and then you have a show every night. Well, what I used to do at night is watch a little bit of TV. So what did I give up? I gave up television. No big deal. I get some of my TV time in Sunday evening, watch certain shows like 60 Minutes and CBS Sunday morning and stuff like that, that I think adds value and knowledge and current events. And then wife and I'll do a movie over the weekend or something like that. And then, but most of the time I spend reading or involved in the business, and I love doing this show, and especially when I get an email from a listener. And as a family member, as a client, she's going to become a client at some point. And it is Shelly that sent in an email. And basically, it's a long email, and I don't want to share all of it, but it was very nice of you to send that over to me, Shelly. And I do remember talking with you. She said, thanks for the show, as I believe that it's a great source of information. And she continues to say, when I get closer to retirement, I'll come see you again. And we have a connection because we grew up in Mississippi and attended the same high school and such. She graduated a few years ahead of me in that case. But yeah, and she was talking about how where we grew up and such, and we just didn't have to worry. You know, I can tell you what, it's rare back then I ever locked my car, and I didn't have to worry about being out late at night and didn't ever go, and sure didn't have that awareness of my environment at that time. So things are quite a bit different today. We all have to be careful. So once again, Shelly, thanks for that email. One of the things I want to touch on here, and let's see, how many minutes do we have? Probably not many, 8 minutes. I'm going to get started on this. We've got Wes Blanchard coming up in a few minutes to join us on the show, and he's going to sit in with me the next 2 hours. As you've probably noticed, no James Parker. He's been on assignment in Texas this week, and he'll be back joining us next week. So we'll get to find out a little bit about what he's been up to, and hopefully it's some good as well. 10 retirement decisions that you might make and regret. You know, one of them, and I see this a lot, is where somebody tells me, yeah, I'm going to work from now on. I had one of those meetings this week. There was maybe two of them, but yeah, I don't plan on retiring. But one of them threw in there, and is a physician, and he basically said, yeah, but it depends on my health. My health may change that, but he said, I have a successful practice. Everything's going good. And he'd just like to continue as long as his health dictates there. So, yeah, I told him that I'm kind of the same way. Work isn't that hard. Use my mind a lot. As long as my mind's good, I'm going to be doing this a long time. Baby boomers like me have every intention of staying on the job until 70, either because they want to or have to or desire to maximize Social Security benefits. And I had a few meetings this week. That's what they talked about, is how to maximize Social Security. But that plan could backfire. You could be forced to retire early for a number of reasons. Consider this, though, is you might plan to work that far. And I had a paralegal that recently retired. And I remember when she started working with us, this is probably some 4 years ago, that we started helping her with her money. And that's one of the things she told me in the first meeting was, I don't plan to ever retire. And then she called me back later, said, you know, I've been thinking about that. You might want to consider maybe me, or that I would be working 5 or 6 more years. And I said, I already have taken that into consideration. I believe you when you say you're going to work from now on, but also I'm going to look out for you when being that you may not quite go that long. And actually she retired about, from telling me that she's going to work from now on, she worked about 4.5 years and recently retired. So consider this. 1 in 4 U.S. workers expect to work beyond age 70 to make ends meet. According to, and see, some of this is because they're needing the money. They don't have enough saved for retirement. According to recent Willis Towers Watson survey, you can't count on being able to bring in a paycheck if you need it. While 51% of the workers expect to continue working some in retirement, found a separate 2015 survey from Transamerica Center for Retirement Studies, only 6% of actual retirees report working into retirement as a source of income. Whether you work or not, it's always up to you. 3 out of 5 retirees left the workforce earlier than planned, according to Transamerica. Of those, 66 did so because of employment-related issues, including changes at their company, losing their jobs and taking buyouts, health-related issues, either their own health or that of a loved one, was cited by 37% out there. And I'll tell you what I probably see as far as when we're dealing with clients and retiring is that we do have a good percentage that retire early than expected. And lately is a lot of the change in the energy sector and layoffs and cutbacks, because we have a lot of clients that would have continued on for a few more years. So they're adjusting to retirement or taking some income, finding some secondary work, but it doesn't necessarily play out how they quite expect it to do so. Another thing that, so just be careful on that decision and plan for it maybe not going that far as well. You know, have a plan A and a plan B. Putting off saving for retirement. The single biggest financial regret of Americans surveyed by Bankrate was waiting too long to start saving for retirement. Respondents 50 and older expressed this regret at a much higher rate than younger respondents. Many people do not start aggressively saving for retirement until they reach their 40s or 50s. Then they're kind of behind the curve on that. Morningstar calculated how much you need to sock away monthly to reach the magic number of 1 million saved by 65. Assuming a 7% annual return, might be a bit high on that. You'd need to save $381 a month if you start at age 25, $820 a month starting at age 35, almost $2,000 a month starting at 45, and almost $5,800 a month starting at 55. You see, that just really becomes an obstacle when you delay. The young people that call into the show and that we get to talk to, you know, they have unbelievable opportunity if they're in their 20s and start putting away money, even in their 30s as well. You know, reasonable amount when you're taking advantage of a 401k, putting it pre-tax in, and then the employer's matching it. There shouldn't be that big of an obstacle of getting enough money away. And everybody's mindset, yours too, Angie, is to be a millionaire at retirement. We've talked about the game plan we set up for James Parker on the show a number of times, is to think that. And really, you should be thinking more like of being a multimillionaire in retirement because of inflation and lost buying power. Remember, in 1974, a Big Mac cost 75 cents. I think when you buy the Big Mac combo now, it's something like $5 on that. So is that some inflation or what? Uncle Sam offers incentives for procrastinators. Once you turn 50, you can start making a catch-up contribution to your retirement accounts, whether that's your 401k or individual IRAs. In 2016, you can put in additional $6,000 a year in your 401k on top of the standard $18,000. So you can really sock away $24,000. That's kind of my objective in my company plan, is to make sure I put away the max every year. And the catch up on IRAs, if you're 50 or older, is $5,500 per person. Okay, so we're just about to wrap up this first hour. I'm going to continue this later in the show. We've got Wes Blanchard with W.J. Blanchard Law coming up next. So we're going to talk about wills and estate planning tied into financial planning. And then a whole heck lot more. We're live here. Get your phone out. Download the app. Call 504-260-0995. Or email me, Gregory at GregoryRicks.com. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, 401k and retirement authority. And radio show host on the side of that. You're listening to us on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. We're live here every Saturday from 10 to 1. If you would like to get involved in the conversation or seeking that IRA question, or if you win the lottery, we had one of those callers in today. Somebody getting a nice surprise. That's, you know, it's like getting struck by lightning. And he said that they're shell-shocked, but they're feeling pretty good. So they survived it, winning it. That's a pretty cool thing. It's rare. It's like Super Bowl winners. That, you know, there's not a lot of them out there. But if you want to call in, join the conversation, 504-260-0995. Email me, Gregory at GregoryRicks.com. Download the Gregory Ricks app. You can text with us and get involved in other facets of the show, as well as my firm, download the iHeartRadio app. My link in my firm's app will take you to that if you're needing to stream and continue the show. That's how our national audience does it. I've got a speaking engagement in Dallas in September. I'm speaking before an audience of about 500 of the country's best advisors. And one of the things we're in preparing that presentation, we've got a map of callers where they've called from around the country. And it's just really, when I look at that, it's really surprising how the audience and this show has grown. And thank you to all of you that are listening through the terrestrial radio in your car or at home or on the stream through the iHeartRadio app. Let's see, what else? You can text us through Messenger, Facebook, interact with us there, Twitter as well. What other mediums have I missed out there? Or just knock on the door of the building. I don't think anybody but us are in here today. It's quiet in the building, isn't it, Wes?
It is.
We have Wes Blanchard of W.J. Blanchard Law with us in studio. This is his Saturday for the month. Estate planning is going to be the conversation, but he's a member of the Total Wealth Authority. Total Wealth Authority involves members that kind of help clients financially in some form or fashion, that we all team together to make a difference. And we put all that together a few years back, and we also have Stacy. I did it as Stacy. No, it's Tracy and Stephanie. I guess Stacy is the combining their names. But Tracy and Stephanie of Dwell Nola Realty. We have Dwayne Stein of Cross Country Mortgage, and he actually is the host and chef of Mortgage Gumbo that comes on after our show ends at 1 o'clock, and he's doing a live show. We had a caller on the Daily Wrap last night that we kind of referred him regarding credit issues, trying to do a home equity line of credit, having a tough time, even though the home's paid for, of getting a line of credit. So we even referred him to that show. We've got Jude Heath, CPA firm. And let's see, did I miss anybody on that? I guess I got everybody in it. And of course, I'm a member of it too, Gregory Ricks and Associates, and we do money management, financial advice, and are licensed fiduciaries. Let's see. So what's on the menu today for us, Wes?
Well, I mean, there's a few things that talk about, you know, there's a ton out there, obviously. But there was a couple of client interactions that I had over the last couple of weeks that sort of struck me as something that was maybe not as well known to the public. And so I wanted to share a few things on the distinction between community property and separate property. I think people maybe have an idea of what it is, but how does it all work? How does it work with an estate plan? How does it work with a will? And those types of things, I think, play into a larger picture, not only of planning an estate, but also a financial plan. And certainly once you or your spouse pass away, there's definitely going to be some education that needs to go on. So I figure better sooner rather than later that we get some of that out there, so that some of these things are maybe on the tips of the tongues before it comes to being a griping type of situation.
You know, there was, I remember a conversation or two, I think one on the show and one in the office, that was similar regarding separate assets, but they were surprised that they would be sharing the fruits of the separate property there. So I kind of had to go and explain that to them. There are ways to stop that from happening after the fact, as well as easier before the fact. So, but I'm going to let you explain that because you are the estate planning attorney.
Sure, and I appreciate that. That's exactly what I was planning to talk about. That was the experience that I had with a couple of clients. And just to sort of set the table, community property, I think everybody's sort of familiar with it. It's anything that's acquired by either spouse during the existence of the marriage. And, you know, that includes, obviously, income and things like that, as well as property that's donated to the spouses jointly. Any fruits that come from community property are also going to be community property. If there's any damages awarded to either spouse with regard to the loss of a community piece of property, that's going to be community assets as well. And really, the sort of catch-all is anything that's not defined as separate property is going to be defined as community property, obviously assuming that there's a marriage. With that said, you know, there needs to be sort of an explanation as to what separate property is. Any personal injury settlements that you get, whether you're married or not, that's going to be separate property. But more importantly, anything that's inherited by you as a particular spouse, as opposed to jointly, that's going to be separate property. But the issue that I faced recently with the client is similar to what you were explaining, is there was a piece of property that was inherited by their mother, one of their parents, and she had remarried since, and this piece of property was generating income. So now we have a situation where it's a separately owned asset, had the asset prior to the marriage, actually it inherited prior to the marriage, but since got married, and now the income is actually community property.
They did not do a prenup for separate property.
They certainly didn't. And that's, you know, that's fine, and some folks want it that way. The issue actually comes when you're dealing with the third party who's looking in and saying, okay, well, shouldn't those fruits be separate property as well, since it's coming from separate property? But as we stated earlier, anything earned during the existence of a marriage is going to be deemed community property.
Correct.
So that rental income is going to be community property. And so there was a discussion there, obviously, as to what sort of options these third parties might have with regard to separating those assets out as a community inheritance or a separate inheritance. And we kind of went down that path and explained to them the importance of making that distinction. You know, obviously, if one of their parents passes away without a will, there's laws of intestacy. I think that's on deck. We'll get to those. We kind of touched on it last time I was here, but it follows a different sort of flow chart, if you will, a piece of community property does, rather than a piece of separate property. And so that was really important to explain to them. And frankly, they were in a good spot, because regardless of whether their mother had a will or did not have a will, they stood to be in the position that they were hoping to be in. It just became more of an assessment of the situation, and, you know, boiled down essentially to a waiting game, and, you know, how much do you want to rock the boat? And, you know, I think we had a really good conversation sort of about what an estate is and how those two factors, being community and separate property, play into that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have also confusion on what an estate is regarding their IRAs, their home, the car, the gold coins, the savings account. Now, going back to that, say separate property, and inherited property is separate property. Long as they don't commingle it, it's simple as that, right? That it just stays separate if they keep it as separate property, but that income from that account or from that separate property becomes a part of the community. But what I want to drill down to is, okay, we've got that rental property generating income. And let's say it's worth $200,000 when they inherited the property, and now it's worth $250,000. Is the $50,000 increase shared in the separate property? Because the value increased of it after they inherited it.
Is the gain of equity
increased?
It's going to continue to be separate property. It's not bearing any fruit at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So at that point, while it's increased in value, it hasn't necessarily been realized at that point. That still being said, even if they sell it for $250, that's still going to be separate property because, again, you're selling the fruit, the tree rather than the fruit. So if you want to keep that analogy going, you're selling the entirety of the tree. So, yeah, if it's only bearing fruit, then you have the community asset. But if you uproot the tree and move it, sell it, do whatever you want to do with it, it's still going to be a piece of separate property. Yep.
Okay, so they're married. They have this coming in. Can they create a document with the spouse to keep the fruits that's coming off that tree separate as well?
Yeah, you absolutely can. And you can do it one of two ways. You can do it, you know, right at the beginning, before you get started, or you can do it later with court approval.
Okay, awesome. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what makes up an estate and what would go through succession and what would not. And we've had some questions, cases come up regarding trust that probably shouldn't be done in that case. That got a client in Florida where attorney's trying to get them set up a trust, and we'll talk about more of why that is. I want to get your take on it based on the advice that I gave them as well. So we've got a lot more to come here on Winning at Life, and Wes is going to be with us the rest of the show. So if you're wanting to call in, the number is 504-260-0995 to get your financial or estate planning question in. You're listening to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Wow, welcome back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. We're in hour two, live radio. We do this every Saturday from 10 to 1. We do the daily wrap on weeknights at 7 here on iHeartRadio and on WRNO as well. So we have a national reach with both of our shows. If you have a financial question or estate planning question for Wes Blanchard that's joining us the rest of the show, phone number is 504-260-0995, or email me, gregory@gregoryricks.com, or use the Gregory Ricks and Associates app to message us. And we even have a site chat. When you go to my website, gregoryricks.com, there's a chat box there where you can interact with one of the team members. When we went to break, well, I want to mention this. I hadn't even mentioned it this whole show yet. We have a live event coming up this week, Wednesday, at Ruth's Chris at 6:30. You get to see me live, hear me talk about some financial topics. Wes Blanchard's going to share some estate, 5 points you're going to kind of touch basis on estate planning in our conversation on Wednesday. You need to RSVP. The rest of the Total Wealth Authority is going to be there. We're going to fill up the room that we have reserved for this event. You need to call the office to RSVP. It's 504-832-9200 or go to gregoryricks.com. $10 to attend. I'm going to match it, and we're going to donate it to charity as well. So back to the show and estate planning. Wes, when we went to break, I was wanting to ask you about estate planning and what makes up an estate. And I'm going to get that take from you. Then we're going to talk about one of the cases I was involved in regarding the clients in Florida and somebody, an attorney trying to get them to set up a trust.
Sure. And I think the best thing to do when you start sort of breaking down an estate, I think the easiest direction to take is determining what assets are probate assets or succession assets and which ones aren't. The easiest thing to do is say, okay, what are not probate assets? What are things that don't have to pass through succession? And I think the easiest way to think about it is to say, okay, is it based on a contract, and does it have a beneficiary designation? if it does, chances are it doesn't have to go through probate. So the things you're talking about there are life insurance policies, annuities, IRAs, profit sharing plans, different governmental retirement plans. So those are the things that basically are drawn up. They're benefits payable by contract. And those contracts generally always have beneficiary designations. That is why we always talk about the importance of having those beneficiary designations up to date. They don't have to pass through probate. There's not a real chance to challenge them because it's a contract. And a contract law is really strong all over the United States, not just Louisiana, but the terms of the contract, as long as they are clear and explicit, they're going to be given heavy weight. And so having those beneficiary designations up to date is a big deal. And most importantly, frankly, it's free. That's it. It's set up. You don't need an attorney. You don't need major legal advice to make a beneficiary designation in most cases. For the most part, you can set that up the same way you would structure your will. So if you wanted to follow the dictates of your will where everybody gets a quarter or this person gets a half, you can do that and it doesn't cost you a dime. But that's why it's so important, again, because there's no processing that through the court system. There's really not a huge open window for a lot of challenging. So those are the non-probate assets. That's part of your estate. We'll put that over here to the left. To the right, what we have are the probate assets. Those are the terms, those are the assets that pass under the terms of a will, or if you don't have a will, pass under the terms of intestacy or what's called, those are essentially the default rules that Louisiana has in place. And so those are the things like bank accounts, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, cars, other personal property. Those are things that you generally don't see have a beneficiary designation on them. Now, I know some people are going to say, wait, I know certain CDs, they have beneficiaries, and certain bank accounts, you can do payable on death. Yeah, there are exceptions. But for the most part, you can generally group those assets as being probate assets. And in order to pass those on to your heirs, they're going to need to go through the court system. The most important part of that is going to be the real estate, obviously. Absent a trust, you're not able to pass on real estate ownership without having it processed through succession. So again, when you're looking at an estate, break it down to what's probate and what's not probate. And you need to look and say, okay, where are we looking at the most value? Where's the majority of my asset value kept? Is it in probate assets? Is it in non-probate assets? And then you can appropriately determine what sort of estate plan fits your particular instance, your particular situation. If you're all wrapped up, if everything you have is wrapped up in non-probate assets and you don't own any real estate, you don't own any significant personal property that you want to pass on, maybe you're renting a place. You don't even own, you know, your own home or anything like that. Maybe all you need is a simple will. But if you have multiple pieces of real estate, you have multiple stock, bond accounts, and things like that, especially if you're dealing with things that are spread out throughout the United States, real estate in particular, you definitely at least want a will. But more appropriately, you probably are getting into trust territory there, because now you have so many assets that you probably are looking to avoid the probate process altogether. And that's of course one of the major benefits of a trust, is being able to get around that process.
Depending on assets, and we see a lot of people with large 401ks, or put it this way, majority of their wealth is in their 401ks or IRAs. Still working, then yeah, it's 401k. There was a gentleman in the other day between the lump sum pension option, which is neighborhood of, I think it was about $950,000 that he's going to get when he retires. Plus, he's got a 401k that's worth more than $500,000. And the deal about that is that's all protected on the Department of Labor, ERISA, and the federal side. That's protected money. Nobody's going to get to it. And it all goes by beneficiary designation in that case. So there's no question, except if they don't put a beneficiary on that. And we have a client that inherited some money, but that 401k went into the estate. And the reason is there wasn't a beneficiary designation. And later, when going through the deceased's papers, they found that form filled out, signed with an envelope next to it, yet never mailed. So the 401k was neighborhood of $600,000 and got grouped into the estate and became heavily taxed in that case. And it's just simple to make sure the beneficiary designations are set up correctly. And that's where a lot of people don't realize that, you know, even if it's IRAs and you're the IRA owner, it's protected under federal law up to $1 million. So it has built-in protection, like, oh, I want to put it in trust to bulletproof it, or I want to put it in the trust to bypass succession. You don't need to do it for any of those reasons in majority of the cases because of the protection. And like you said, it has beneficiary designation. So I want to add one thing to clarify on the non-succession, non-probate items. That would be like your 401k, 457, 403b, any type of employer plan for you to build pre-tax dollars in is going to have a beneficiary designation. Okay, so that case that I ran into, and this comes up when somebody calls the office, say, hey, we want to change the beneficiary of our IRA to a trust. That's red flags going off everywhere, and my team knows to let me know, not just send the paperwork out that they requested, but let me know this request has came in because it's a red flag. A trust cannot own an IRA. It becomes a taxable event in that case. A human being with a mortality table is who has to be an owner. If you're going to become 70 and a half at some point in your life, then you can own an IRA. An LLC, a trust, none of that's going to become 70 and a half ever in this case. So I'm asking them about what they're doing, and they basically tell me that, okay, they know what the attorney knows what he's doing. And so next thing you know, I'm speaking with a staffer of the attorney, and she can't answer my questions. And then she suggests maybe we should set up a call with you and the attorney. And I said, that would be a really good idea. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to continue that part of the story. And then speaking with the clients again and get Wes's take. You're listening to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without express consent by Gregory Ricks is prohibited.
I got my shades on, top back, rolling with the music, jack one on the wheel, one around you, baby. Sunset, I bet there's a chance we could get shown up, tangled up, lay back and lazy. Pour it on easy.
Welcome back to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I was about to race through it too quick there. And those listening to us on the stream on the iHeartRadio, welcome back to the show. We're live here till 1 o'clock. If you want to call in, join the conversation, or have a financial question or estate planning question, number is 504-260-0995. Email me, Gregory at Gregory Ricks, or message us from the Gregory Ricks and Associates app also. We have a live event coming up Wednesday, July 13th, 6:30 at Ruth's Chris in Metairie. This time I'll clarify which one. There's a lot of Ruth's Chris's. We're going to be at the one in Metairie. So you want to call the office to RSVP, 504-832-9200. I'm going to be there live, of course. You get a chance to hear me discuss some financial topics and meet the Total Wealth Authority. And Wes Blanchard's going to have a discussion regarding estate planning also at the event. So once again, that's this Thursday, 6:30. Call the office, 504-832-9200. When we went to the break, we were talking about a client case. They live in Florida. They called regarding changing their IRA beneficiaries to a trust. sometimes we have people call in and wanting to retitle their IRA to a trust. That can't happen either. And one of the past, on one of the shows, and I actually happen to have my notes here regarding naming trusts as IRA beneficiaries. And you know what? And I know you do inherited, because that's something we talked about when you joined the Total Wealth Authority, and making sure these things are done right. It is not just that simple as changing the name, and not just any trust will work. But it turns out this couple setting up a revocable trust, and we know an inherited IRA trust has to be an irrevocable trust. If it's not, it has to become one at the time of death. Now, so I talked to the attorney on that scheduled phone call that we had, and he seemed very knowledgeable, and he was familiar with a lot of the private letter rulings. So it was a good conversation. But then there was something that just stuck in my mind. And I said, you know, it seems fine going forward from this conversation. And I, you know, I'm not seeing the documents or anything to make an actual judgment, but he did sound knowledgeable. And then, you know, just something popped in my mind the next morning, and it was regarding that revocable. So I went in and I said, hey, Anna, can you get my clients on the phone? I want to speak to them for a minute regarding that trust. So I called them up and asked them what type of trust it was. So they started looking, and that's when they came back and said it was a revocable trust. And then I asked them, what is the purpose of this? Because then I went through and read them some of the requirements right here. And there's five things, or really four, maybe five things here regarding the, it has to qualify as a look through or see through trust. So I basically read that to them. So it violated a couple of those four things that would kind of, and I said, this would blow it up, meaning a whole taxable event. And I said, here's the thing is, you're not going to know this went bad because you're going to be dead. What you need to know is, was this put together right before you die to make sure that doesn't happen? And they said, oh no, we don't want that to happen. They said, look, we're just trying to avoid probate, because Florida is one of the most expensive states to go through probate. And I said, well, first of all, this money is not going through probate. It goes by beneficiary designation. And I said, if you're looking for protection, it's protected up to $1 million per IRA account holder under federal and state statute as well. So it's not going through probate. It's not going through. Are you trying to control it after death to make sure who's inheriting it doesn't spin through it? No, that's not our concern. It's really the probate. And that was my point then. And most of their money's in that. So you know what I find, Wes, is attorneys, and it's just like what we talked about earlier in the show. And I'm not, you know, and I've got a lot of friends that are attorneys. I've got a great one right here that's a friend of mine, Wes, so we're not trying to step on any toes. But you know, there's some that this justifies the expense of the trust is, oh, I've got to get that IRA in there, we've got to do some retiling, I got to make some work, so it justifies my fee, whether it's $2,000, $4,000, $5,000, whatever the fee they're charging is. And that's what my sense was here, when that doesn't have to be, but that's where most of their assets are, outside of their house, car, savings, and after tax brokerage account and such, or savings account. Your thoughts?
Well, obviously, I think it was a great save. It sounds like their main concern was able to be addressed without putting their IRA at risk. You know, as far as the decision making, you know, it really, if they're not looking to control that IRA money afterwards, and really what we are talking about when we're getting to that point is, are you trying to mandate that the IRA be stretched out? because when you make a trust a beneficiary, that's the main purpose of it. If you're going to make the trust a beneficiary and say, look, you know, but we're going to allow he or she to take all the money out at once anyway, well, then what's the point?
Yeah, you don't need a trust for that because that's going to happen. And that goes to what I had mentioned earlier. It has to be a look-through or see-through trust, meaning the RMDs or distributions pass through the trust. If it stays, it can stay in the trust, but it's already after tax because it's a distribution. You don't want to leave it there because it's taxed at max tax rate. So
40%.
You won't. And then the trust can pass it on to the beneficiary, so as long as they're legitimate beneficiaries of the IRA itself as well.
Correct. And you know, that look through, that pass through is what allows the trust to essentially use the age of the beneficiary to the benefit of the stretch. So the youngest beneficiary, the oldest beneficiary, just depending on how many trusts you have set up, you can actually set up multiple different trusts if you're leaving different portions and you want to mandate the stretch provision be used. You know, what you want to do is avoid having, let's say, a 40-year-old beneficiary of the trust and then maybe an 18-year-old, because the stretch provision is going to be applied based on the life expectancy of that 40-year-old.
So yeah, the shortest life expectancy.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so a little trick to get around that is to establish two or three. If you're going to have three or four beneficiaries of the same plan and they're all within, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years of each other, maybe not a big deal. But again, if you have that wide age gap, you don't want the 18-year-old to be subjected to the RMD that the 40-year-old is going to be required to take, because again, it's going to be based on that 40-year-old's age. So you set up a separate trust for the 18-year-old.
Yeah, so it follows the separate account rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so that's something that, you know, it's a little more detail-oriented, but, you know, it's kind of a fun trick to educate about when the opportunity arises. But going back to your story, it seems to me that they were able to achieve their objective of just avoiding probate. They just didn't know it. And you know, like you said, the lawyer's probably justifying an expense, but at the same time, if they're coming in and saying, hey, look, this is what we want to do, his job is not always to justify why they want to do it. His job's to get it done for him. So from that perspective, you know, you certainly, was he capable? Sounded like it, but was it necessary? No. So thankfully, you know, that conversation is what led them to be able to save a few bucks. And I think, again, it sort of highlights the overlap that we have just as members of the same wealth authority, that we're able to constantly communicate that. That, if it were happening between the two of us, would have took all of 30 seconds to get figured out, because we see each other so often. We're in direct contact via cell phone, face-to-face, text message, email, whatever the medium may be. It's quick. And again, I think that's a huge, huge benefit of the Total Wealth Authority. And it works not only through our channel, but it works with Dwayne. It works with Jude. It works with Tracy and Stephanie. It works with the entirety of the wealth team. And again, that's a huge, huge, huge benefit for folks.
Yeah, a couple things here. Let's see how much time I've got. Not enough to read those 4 points. When I come back from the break, I'm going to read those four rules for a see-through. But implementing the IRA trust. Okay, the IRA owner has died. Make sure that after death, the trust is implemented properly. Titling. This is a non-trust, a non-spouse beneficiary, and post-death RMDs follow these rules. This is an inherited IRA. Title it correctly. The inherited IRA would be titled as follow: Fred Johnson, IRA, deceased June 19th, 2015, FBO, Adam Hill, trustee of the Johnson Family Trust, beneficiary. You know, that's what we're talking about, properly titling so it follows the rules. And when I come back from the break, I'm going to give you the four rules of a see-through, but then we've got to also clarify something else regarding protections of inherited IRAs also. So much more to cover. We're here till 1 o'clock. Phone us 504-260-0995 if you'd like some help. You're listening to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Loving every day, that's the prayer that a country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting and fishing and loving every day, early in the morning.
Welcome back to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Wes Blanchard of W.J. Blanchard Law is here with us the remainder of the show. We're going to wrap, well, I don't know that we wrap it up, but we're going to continue the conversation on estate planning and such and cover some financial topics as well into the next hour. If you have a estate planning question or financial question or topic you'd like to help with or situation, 504-260-0995. You can email me, Gregory at GregoryRicks.com. And you can message us through the Gregory Ricks app. Go to your app store and download that app. And, yeah, download iHeartRadio app as well while you're at that. So one of the things we were talking about, a trust situation that came up, and that's why my team always will let me know if somebody's requesting a beneficiary change. We think it's always important to review those every year, but especially gets my attention if they're changing it to a trust, either the titling or beneficiary, because we have to make sure it's correct. Regarding IRAs, or inherited IRAs that are moving to a beneficiary, if it's going to go to a trust, it has to be a look-through or see-through trust for IRA distribution purposes. The trust must meet the following requirements, and it's outlined in regulation section, and I probably read this wrong, Wes, but it's 1.401A94A5. Bunch of hyphens and stuff.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. So that's the IRS code we have to go by. And so number one, the trust is valid under state law or would be, but for the fact that there is no corpus. Now, I know what corpus means. I haven't always known that, but that's also another question I asked that couple when I did the purpose question. I said, what else is going to be in that trust? The answer should have been nothing, but it's, oh, the house, the car, the bank account. With that said, I'm going to let you explain corpus.
Sure. So, I mean, the corpus of the trust is sort of, it goes back, I guess, to its Latin roots. It's the core of the trust. It is it what makes up the entirety of it. It's not a really complex issue, but it's something, again, that it's legal jargon that you need to be aware of when you're placing yourself sort of in the legal playing field. You have to know the difference between the corpus and then the payouts, which are the income. Corpus is the principle of the trust.
Yeah. In this case, no corpus, so there shouldn't be anything inside the trust because it's a pass-through trust. Number two, the trust is irrevocable or the trust contains language to the effect it becomes irrevocable upon death of the employee or IRA owner. When they're referring to employee, that's the one with the 401k. So talk about irrevocable versus revocable.
Sure. So in this instance, you can have a trust that was simply drafted to be irrevocable from the moment it was executed, or you can have a trust that's revocable and by its terms becomes irrevocable, meaning no changes can be made to any part of the trust at the time that the owner dies. And so the main point here is just that there's not going to be any changes that can be made once the IRA owner passes away and now this money's starting to be distributed. There can't be any manipulation of the terms of the trust once the IRA owner's passed away.
Number three, beneficiaries of the trust who are beneficiaries with respect to the trust interest in the employee or IRA owner's benefit are identifiable.
Sure. Identifiable is sort of a very broad term, but number one, you have to be a living, breathing human being. It can't be.
That can turn 70 and a half.
Correct. So, and it can't be a charity. It can't be an alma mater. It can't be an LLC. You have to be a breathing human being.
You're exactly right about that, because in the discussion of this material that I go by, and that's where it kind of messes it up, if the alma mater is one of the beneficiaries along with living, it kind of blows up that trust.
Sure, it absolutely does. And one thing I think you want to point out in this instance is just identifiable doesn't mean by name. So if the trust says, I'm leaving this for the benefit of my grandchildren, it's going to apply to those grandchildren identifiable at the time. So just by using that broadened term, you're not disqualifying yourself. But if it says, for instance, oh, I'm leaving this to whoever my trustee decides are worthy of distributions, that's not going to work.
Right.
So there's a certain, what we call a class identifier. So grandchildren, children, great-grandchildren, cousins, nieces, whoever it may be, you can identify that person by narrowing it down. It just can't be some sort of discretionary choice, can't be a entity, can't be an alma mater, anything like that.
Number four, the required trust documentation has to be provided by the trustee of the trust to the plan administrator no later than October 31st of the year following the year of the IRA owner's death.
Yeah, that one's pretty straightforward. Again, it's a mouthful, but it's basically just a deadline. You need to obviously let everyone know that this is how it's going to be structured. The payouts are going to be RMDs, and they're going to be passing through a trust. And here's the, you know, adequate information establishing that a trust exists.
Yeah, and that's just kind of, if you're involved in it or thinking about utilizing a trust, this kind of is four core rules that really simplifies, is this deal going to work or not? And I don't care what they tell you, it has to fall within these rules. It's very clear, because if it doesn't and you die, it becomes a taxable event and you don't even know it happened. So that's one reason we review trust documents and wills when clients come into the office. Something we ask for, if they don't want them reviewed, that we're fine with it, but we do want to have a look at those documents to make sure the beneficiary's right, there's no errors, that if you're using trust, is it set up to do what you expect it to? You know, what is the purpose of that? That kind of core thing we had the theme of this. And it's just, it's always, even figuring out what you're wanting your money to do for retirement and the, you know, what's in that savings, or you have emergency savings that's maybe too much. And then what's the purpose of that? What's the purpose of the IRA? You know, one of them could be is, yeah, I plan to leave it to the kids one day. I don't need it. We're just going to let it build up. Okay, well, then it has a lot of time to work in that case. Now, something we brought up and we were mentioning earlier about protection of IRA owners' accounts and 401ks under federal statutes. And you mentioned a code that I was aware of that happened in 2014, a Supreme Court ruling regarding inherited accounts. I'm going to let you tell the story.
Sure. So the name of the case is Clark versus Ramaker. And the gist of it is that there was a plaintiff who inherited $300,000 in an IRA from her mother. Subsequently, she was, you know, in bad financial times, and she sought to file bankruptcy. Well, as we talked about earlier, if you're an IRA owner, you're protected from certain creditors and things like that up to $1 million if you're the owner. The situation that the Supreme Court was faced with here is that, okay, now this is an inherited IRA. Okay, so what does that mean and how does that change things? Well, that means, number one, you're now the owner speaking, you know, but truth be told, now you have to start taking RMDs. And that was the big sticking point for the court. And what the court says is, you know, because you're required to take those RMDs, you're not actually using this account as a protected retirement fund. And as a result, you're not entitled to all the protections that come with that retirement account. So what that meant essentially is, if you inherit an IRA and you subsequently file bankruptcy, you're no longer protected from those creditors. They can go after that. Now, the situation's obviously different if it's your IRA to begin with and it's not inherited. Those are going to be protected. But in this instance, we know that they've come down with this particular set of circumstances: bankruptcy, inherited IRA, not protected. And that's a big deal. One of the ways you can obviously get around that is to have a trust own the or be the beneficiary. And so now this is not an asset of the person who's filing bankruptcy anymore. And so you have that separation from assets. The person doesn't have any control over it. They don't get to choose who the beneficiaries are. They don't get to choose when the benefits are distributed, under what conditions, anything like that. That's all set up by an independent third-party trustee. And so as a result, they're divorced enough from that money where a creditor can't claim that, hey, this is his or her asset and we're entitled to seize it as a result of, you know, the judgment against them.
Arm's length,
yep,
is what it is. I think that's a great thing to understand on structuring. Now, for a spousal beneficiary, it has the protections there because it's for retirement purposes. It's when it's going to the kids or another non-spouse beneficiary that it loses that protection.
That's a great point.
Okay, so we're coming up on hour three of Winning at Life. Wes is going to stay with us. We're going to continue the discussion regarding forced heirship and intestate laws as well, and living trust versus testamentary trust. And I've got a number of financial topics. We're going to try to fit it all in. It's going to be tough. And I even want to talk about our self-directed IRAs with real estate inside of it. You're listening to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. We're here for one more hour. We're done at 1 o'clock, and we're going to hand it off to Dwayne Stein, chef, host of Mortgage Gumbo. He's going to help you with your mortgage questions. Hopefully that fella calls him back about, there was a call last night's show that was talking about his credit, needing to borrow some money. Big thing, very frustrated. I think Dwayne could help him a lot. So stay tuned for Dwayne's show. We've got Wes Blanchard in studio with us the remainder of the show. So we're going to be touching on some more estate planning, along with discussion of a case that clients were back in. Well, not clients, but soon to be clients, was back in for a follow-up visit to kind of get their planning done and aligned. And actually, they interacted with Wes, as most of our clients interact with the Total Wealth Authority. If you have any questions or would like to join the conversation, call us 504-260-0995. You can email me gregory@gregoryricks.com. There's site chat at the website, gregoryricks.com. And go and download that app. Go to your app store, do a search, Gregory Ricks and Associates, or just Gregory Ricks, and download that app. It's going to connect you to iHeartRadio. Clients can access their dashboard through the app because we have this GPS website. It's a guided planning system, but I always kind of think of your path along the way, whether you're adjusting distributions or needing a lump sum for a purchase or fix that AC system, or you come into more money. Like one of our callers was a lotto winner that we've had a conversation with. And you think of recalculating along the way, and that's why we always want to look at out 5, 10, 15 years to see where you are going financially. So give us a call if we can be of help. And during the week, I'm always available. And my team, I have three investment advisors on the team, total support staff of about 11 people. You can call us during the week for help. It's 504-832-9500. 9200. So Wes had a family back in this week. You were able to sit down and talk to them about a will package also, and that creates a lot of work for you because it's just surprising how many people do not have wills, just the basic minimum. And even if you have a trust, do you need a will?
Yeah, you absolutely need a will.
You need to pour over.
That's it. And that's for those of you aren't familiar with that term, that's essentially sort of a catch-all. You want to put everything that you have into the trust and avoid that probate process, but in the event you forget something or you acquire something relatively close to, you know, a sudden passing, that pour of a will acts as a conduit. You know, it falls over into your estate. The will says, hey, throw everything to the trust. It's gonna guide you on what to do with this.
I've got a new term for it. A janitorial will. It cleans everything up.
That is not as appealing, I suppose.
But it tells you what it does.
It does, yeah. Yeah, I mean, catch basin, janitorial, I guess it's all the same.
Yeah, that just occurred to me there. Okay, so they were back in this week for a follow-up visit, and one of the things we had been working with them on is regarding their debt situation. They had run up a number of credit card bills. It'd be a lot more debt than you want to retire with. I believe is in excess of $40,000. And so they're both basically at the point of being retired right now. This month is kind of what's happening. But with that said, they have a debt obstacle. And one of the things I talked to them about was using some software to help them plan what should be paid, when and where every month to cycle to how do we accelerate this debt and know what the end date is going to be in that case. And when they came back in for their second visit, they had not done that at that time. And maybe I fussed them a little bit, but I said, you know, you can run up $50,000 in bills, but you can't spend $39.95 to help you get rid of all of that debt. And what I'm referring to is zilchworks.com. That's zilchworks.com. Even had somebody from our website go through the chat box, interact with a team member, and send over that question. And we're going to give them a call on Monday to make sure they know the resource in case they're not listening to the show. But they were asking about that software of how do you get out of debt. And I told them, look, I could do it for you, but we're going to charge you several hundred dollars for the process. But here's the thing, you're not really taking ownership of it. And one reason they probably didn't initially do it, it's human nature. Do we want to face the bad news? For sometimes they'll, you know, if they're not liking their statements or the bills, just don't open it. It's like, it's not good news. So you ignore it. But the reason I don't want to make money off of their debt. So I just want them to go get the software, pay the $39.95, not pay me several hundred dollar fee to do that for them, but to take ownership and see that, invest in it, and just own that debt situation, and also know when that end date is, because I think that's when you're in this debt and you just can't seem to get ahead on it. Having an end date is like, wow, when you think about it, I'm out in 48 months. So when they came back in on this last visit, they had actually done that. They ran the report, showed it to me. So they have $2,500 a month going to the bills. So it's going to prioritize the debt, basically highest interest rate, and pay it off first, then shift the money to the next one that's a priority to help accelerate this. And if you follow the plan, they're done in 48 months. Now, if they get to where they can throw a little bit more money in it, they can recalculate it and pull that debt down faster. So being retired right now, it jams them up a little bit, having that debt and such to pay off. But actually, I have the GPS that we built for them, and that's the guided planning system. We do mathematical retirement planning so we can see where you're going to be financially. I kind of like to know that number every year. So that's when you hear me talk about, I want to know where you're going to be 5, 10, 15 years out. We have to know where you are headed along that path down the financial road. Financial planning is about reaching that financial destination you wish to arrive at. So we create mathematical financial plans and then recalculate them as needed, which can happen anytime after day one. Because when I set it up, it is perfect. It is the math. And then life happens. So when we were looking at their income, we're kind of looking to kick out about $31,000 this year. Then we kind of increased it. I had them at 57 gross. Now I have it up to 62. They're wanting to travel. So it is affecting their money, and they've taken ownership that it's going to be a little bit of spend down over the next 10 years and probably a little bit ongoing after that. But they have no intentions of trying to leave everything behind. So they're taking out more income than probably is going to be generated by the assets. But one of the things she spoke of, well, I still want to retire. I still want to travel in the early years of our retirement. So we kind of built that in to $62,000 the next 5 years after this year. And then I dialed it back. Actually, I showed $62,000 a year for 4 years. Then I dialed it back to 57. Why? They're supposed to be debt-free in 48 months. So that's less than what I have built out here, shorter period. So I dialed it back $5,000 to $57,000, because how much did we free up a month by getting debt-free? $2,500 a month, $30,000 a year. So it really creates a nice cushion for them. If they wanted to stop the slow spend down of assets, they actually have the ability to do that at that time and dial back income, because they've freed up so much annual income with their social, and they're just not just relying on the assets. There's social security income of his involved. There's a pension as well. She has $300,000 in 401k money, and in this case, as money left at the old job also. So actually what we did was show her taking that $300,000, putting it in a fixed indexed annuity, utilizing an income rider that would give her the ability to double the income benefit base in the next 10 years and guarantee a lifetime income stream. So she will inherit the Social Security, his larger check, and the pension. And even if the assets did happen to get spent down, her $300,000 is positioned to generate her income and continue the standard of living that she's accustomed to from now on going forward. So we kind of started out with this. Where they are looking at now is about $1.3 million, and in 10 years they would be at $1.212 million. So we're talking about just over 10 years, $100,000 spend down, where they're actually taking somewhere in the neighborhood of $600,000 in distributions and becoming debt free. I love income planning, and that is a lot of what we do every day, and we create it mathematically. If you want some help with that, call my office, 504-832-9200. We're going to pay a few bills. We'll be right back. You're listening to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. Welcome back to Winning at Life. You're listening to us on News Talk 99.5 WRNO or the iHeartRadio app. We welcome listeners of both types. If you have a financial question or estate planning question, call us. Wes Blanchard is sitting in with us this last hour. Call us 504-260-0995. Email me, Gregory at GregoryRicks.com, with the question if you prefer, or use the iHeartRadio app, site chat, Facebook, all kind of ways you can reach out to us. We're all over the social media thing. I've been talking lately a good bit about self-directed IRAs, and self-directed IRAs are basically a custodial account to where you can put alternative type investments into that IRA, like vending machine business, auto repair business, real estate. Wes, you know anybody that uses a self-directed IRA to hold real estate?
I don't.
You don't? Okay. Hey, one of the things I wanted to touch on here, since you're here, commingling personal and IRA funds or self-dealing. And I find that people may not realize that's a problem with a self-directed IRA. As you can see from, now, before this, when I'd covered this before, I'd covered prohibited transactions. And one of those is you cannot self-deal with your IRA money. That also means that you can't get your family to do it either. You cannot have your IRA engage in financial transactions with family members because you could not do it on your own. This means your spouse, ancestors like parents or grandparents, lineal descendants, your children or grandchildren, or a spouse of a lineal descendant. I hadn't heard you use lineal descendant before. You ever use that?
No, it seems redundant to me, but maybe people just look at it differently than I do.
For example, you cannot have your IRA trustee, the financial institution holding your IRA funds, buy a building owned by your spouse or arrange to lease it back to her. From the definition of prohibited transaction, there are some key terms that need further definition. A disqualified person is the IRA owner, the IRA owner's spouse, ancestors, descendants, spouse of descendants, entity 50% or more owned by anyone above, anyone who provides an indirect benefit to you. Not siblings or live-in friends or partners, but transactions with these people that provide an indirect benefit to you are also prohibited. And you know what prohibited means? It's something that's going to cause your IRA to become fully taxable, is what a prohibited event is. So moving on to... You find that interesting, Wes?
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah, no.
I love all this stuff.
You got to know the rules, and I think they did a good job at telling you that there's not much gray area. What you may consider gray area is, in fact, not gray.
Yeah, if it's gray, you better get a clarification on that. Let's see. Here is, and I've been trying to cover this all week, Angie, on the show. You know, and it... And Angie was kind of surprised without Parker. She said, you might would run out of something to talk about. Oh, no, I wouldn't. Heck, I've, you know, like I mentioned, I've got a conference that I'm one of the keynote speakers at in September, and I've got a four-hour time to fill. And actually, I found that I don't think I'm going to have enough time with all I'm wanting to discuss and what they're kind of wanting also have noted. These are things we'd like to talk about, you to talk about that you and your firm does really well at. And I was sitting there, actually, I said, I don't think we're going to have enough time. Unbelievable. Okay, 7 self-directed IRA issues you should probably review. Now, on last night's show, I talked about the September 2011 SEC Investor Alert that was issued regarding self-directed IRAs, but it addresses the risk of fraud promoters targeting self-directed IRAs. It does not, however, address many unique challenges that can arise when legitimate non-traditional assets are purchased in a self-directed IRA. First, prohibited IRA investments. Although a self-directed IRA account can give the IRA owners access to additional investment options beyond that of a typical IRA, there are still a number of investments that are off limits. For example, IRA rules prohibit life insurance, collectibles such as antiques, rugs, artwork, stamps, and coins. And you're saying, wait a minute, I can't do coins. You cannot do coins other than U.S. minted gold, silver, platinum coins from being held within the IRA. IRAs are also prohibited from owning S corporation stock through this is due to S corporation rules and not any IRA restrictions. I know there's sometimes it comes across, and we've talked about it on the show over the past years, and I can't tell you where I've been doing this for 6 years, so we've covered a lot of stuff. This is, you know, you follow this show long enough, you're going to have an ultimate degree in financial matters. But sometimes work around where people can get access to their IRA money and to buy stuff, but not have a taxable event, and they do create an entity that holds the stock, then that allows them to do some other things with the money. And you got to be careful, really careful with that. That's complicated and probably means you're going to get audited, because on some of these prohibited things that they're saying you shouldn't do, it's going to flag an audit. And knowing how complicated doing stuff with self-directed IRAs on alternative investments means you're probably going to blow it up. Number two is losing out on potential tax benefits. Certain tax benefits could be lost that would otherwise be available if the same investment was made in a non-IRA account. For example, real estate is one of the more common holdings in self-directed IRA accounts. And one reason I'm covering this, it comes up all the time. People are always, well, what do you think about holding real estate in IRA? What by rental property or farmland and such? And when I kind of talk about and wanted to read that self-dealing, now I'm going to jump off of this just for a moment, but I've got a client that has a whole bunch of farmland, and he bought it inside of his IRA. And then he had the IRA sell some of the land to him personally. And that's actually a prohibited event. Now, this was prior to working with us, but that's a prohibited event. At some point, the IRS could get wind of this, and then it just gets ugly after that. Giant taxable event. Okay, so once again, real estate's typically is owned within an IRA account. The ability to deduct depreciation is lost. In addition, while the sale of the property within an IRA would not trigger a tax, when those funds are eventually distributed, tax will be paid at an ordinary income tax rate. On the other hand, if the property were purchased outside of a retirement account as a capital asset, any gains on the sale of the property would be taxed at a lower capital gains tax rate. So you're giving up depreciation and you're giving up being taxed at a capital gain tax rate. If the property was held outside of an IRA and was not sold during the owner's lifetime, heirs would get a step-up basis, eliminating any capital gains tax on appreciation that occurred before death. I think that's a pretty big thing to miss out on, don't you, Wes?
Yeah, that's huge.
You see that in a lot of estate planning, and that's one reason we always tell people, if you're inheriting property, your parents' property or something as a result of a death, get that property appraised, because you're going to protect your step-up basis. What's the best type of IRA to hold real estate in? A Roth IRA, appreciation or gain on the sale of property held inside of Roth IRA generally will be tax-free when the property or sales proceeds are distributed. Unrelated business tax, or UBIT, it's unrelated business income tax. So they refer to it as UBIT, is assessed when tax-exempt entities such as an IRA engages in a business activity that's not related to its general purpose. For example, if a self-directed IRA account is used to purchase a sandwich shop, the income generated from the business would be subject to UBIT. Although it may be delicious, making sandwiches is definitely not the general purpose of the IRA. So your IRA is creating a separate income that's being taxed because it's not of the purpose of the IRA. This tax was created to keep exempt entities on a level playing field with non-tax exempt entities. Talking about having a pricing advantage, if you don't ever have to pay tax, we're undercutting all the local sandwich shops there. I've got, four more parts to this. When we come back, we'll get this cleaned up. I'll finally get it off my plate here about the 7 things you need to review. We'll be right back in a few minutes. You're listening to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
The contents of this show are meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to take place of your attorney, accountant, tax professional, personal trainer, football coach, interior decorator, or those fortune tellers at Jackson Square. Please consult a financial advisor before making all investment decisions. Now, back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Gregory Ricks & Associates is a registered investment advisory firm. We have disclosures called Form ADV that you could request a copy of. It's 504-832-9200, and we'll send one out if you want it, but you're getting one when you come in and go through the process with us. We're pretty much painless. You know, a lot of people don't understand our process at our office. By the way, this is Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5. WRNO. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Wes Blanchard is in with us this remaining few minutes of the show. We, you know, we'll be off the air at 1. We have to make room for Dwayne Stein and Mortgage Gumbo. But as far as our appointment process, really painless, just like a first visit that came in yesterday morning, and we've sit down and talked about where they're going financially. And look, here's the max. My meeting is max hour and 15 minutes. Some 45 minutes in, there's a door knock letting us know that we have about 15 minutes left. So I have a little bit of cushion there, but it can't go longer than that because I have another meeting set. And that on the back end of that meeting, when we're about out of time, one of my team members is going to join us, and that's a signal, because instead of door knocking, then they just come on in the meeting room. And I'm turning it, I'm just wrapping up. Is there any other questions? Are we good for today? And then I slide my laptop around, because what they're there to do is ask the family, what would you like to do next? From my standpoint, they can become a client. They've already done their first meeting. They can become a client at that point going forward. We don't push. We don't try to get them to make a decision like that or at any point ever. I just believe it should be you that if you're comfortable and want to go forward, you're the one that needs to decide that. If you're not, and you want to sleep on it for whatever time, 2 days, a month, 5 years, I'm good with that. We're very comfortable, and this is a huge decision you're making on picking somebody to help you be the Sherpa of your money, and that is a guide of your money, and the distribution phase is one of the most dangerous phases with your money, just like going to climbing Mount Everest. What's the most dangerous part? Where do the people usually die? Coming down. And coming down that financial mountain is what we're referring to. So once again, if you'd like help with from us during the week or come in, just call 504-832-9200 and my team will schedule a visit the time that works for you and my team. So now we've got a couple of callers, Wes. So let's see. Oh, we've got a probate hearing question coming up. Let's see. Let me push. I was trying to look for my mouse because on the weeknight show, I do this with a mouse instead of actually setting at the phone. But you can do as Lindell has done. Call us at 504-260-0995 to answer a question. So we have Lindell from Destrehan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Ricks. I'm getting ready to go to a probate hearing probably sometime in August. It will be in Texas. I will be named the executor. Now, do you have a fee that you think would be fair, approximately $2,500? Do you think that is a fair price for a fee?
Well, I've got Wes Blanchard here. He is an estate planning attorney, so I'm going to kind of let him ask you a few questions to help solve that. Go ahead, Wes.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, as far as Texas goes, obviously that's I'm not licensed to practice there, but I can tell you in Louisiana, if you're going to be named the executor of the estate here, you would be entitled to 2.5% or up to 2.5% of the gross probate estate. So whatever that calculation shakes out to there, you know, you can maybe use that as a guiding point. Maybe you want to go a little higher, you want to go a little lower, but you definitely want to keep in mind how much work may be necessary. I don't know how complex the administration is going to be, you know, but definitely keep that in mind. If it's going to take up a lot of your time, you certainly don't want to make it, you know, just for charity here, because after all, you are the one taking all the responsibility. But if it's going to be sort of an open and shut case pretty quick, maybe you just kind of want to say, look, yeah, I just need to cover my travel expenses, my off time and things like that, and I think we'll be fine. But if you want to use a benchmark standard, like I said here, you're at 2.5% or up to that of the gross probate estate.
I'm guessing this is my mom's estate, and we'll be divided, of course, between our siblings. And I'm guessing the total estate value is probably around $300. And he was thinking that it'd probably be $25,000 to $3,000. The fee. And I was just wondering, you think that's fair, you know, a fair fee? And also, when I go to the court, well, yeah, I guess you won't know because you're not, you know, from Louisiana, this is in Texas. I don't be have a fee, a court fee. Would that be on top of that? I didn't even ask you what were that. Do you think that would occur, or he would cover that?
Well, I would certainly hope that any fees that are being charged by the attorney are going to be included in his fees. Generally speaking, the attorney is always going to get any court costs back. So usually the way it works is that they'll more than likely be fronting those court costs.
Okay.
So all the associated filings and things like that. And then once that is all wrapped up, he'll obviously send a bill. He or she will send a bill for his services as well as his out-of-pocket cost.
Okay. So you're thinking that $2,500 to $3,000, that's not
that's
exorbitant. That's pretty fair.
Yeah,
low,
I mean,
based upon that fee you said, because that on $300,000, 2.5%, $7,500.
Right,
so he's low there.
Yeah, three puts you right at 1%. Like I said, man, just give it a look and decide whether it's going to be, you know, a week long sort of process or if it's going to be a few years long. You know, just see how many roadblocks you anticipate. If you have any issues with siblings and maybe anticipate sort of some contesting going on in the probate court, you might want to stick with the higher fee. But if you think it's going to be a really quick experience, then maybe, you know, you just let everybody else off the hook a bit and just go with the 25 to 300 or 300.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be anything contested. I mean, we're not, any of us are like that, and she don't have any creditors out there, I don't believe at all. So I think it's going to be open and shut pretty much.
Sure. Well, then, yeah.
That's what he was thinking, too.
Okay.
Okay. Cool. Thank you, Lindell. Hopefully that helps you. Good luck on that.
Thank you.
And we'll go to Janet from Mandeville. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Thanks for taking my call. And I'd like to thank you, too, personally, again, for letting me sit with you for two sessions in your office. And it was very information, you know, the information was great that you provided.
Awesome. How can we help you today?
Okay. I have a question about, I have a trust and, you know, it was like a summary, like that was put in the, it was registered at the courthouse. And it was written out, like, I don't know what you call this, like a excerpt or something?
An extract, yep.
Extract, correct. That's right. By the title insurance. So I guess on top of this, it says description of trust in accordance to Louisiana Revised Statute of 9:2092. So I guess I didn't really understand what is this 9:2092 means.
Okay, so what that's referring to is the location of the statute, that's the title. So if you were to go look up the statute, that's what where you would be looking. 9 would be your title, and then 202 or whatever the rest of the numbers is going to be your article number. What that boils down to is essentially they're putting that extract into the public record because I'm assuming then at that point that you've also transferred some real estate then into the trust. Is that correct?
Correct.
Right. So that's sort of a sister pairing with that transfer. You file that extract in there just to sort of put everybody on notice that, look, these are the players that are in this trust here. Here's the beneficiaries. Here's the trustee. And so it doesn't necessarily just leave people wondering, okay, this such and such trust owns this piece of property, but how do I get in touch with the people who I need to find? You know, how do I get in touch with the trustee of this trust? How do I get in touch with the beneficiaries? It kind of is putting the public on notice of the basic bare minimum information regarding the ownership of the property.
Okay, so this statute here is for majority of the trust, or this is just for my trust?
That statute is pertaining to the requirement to file that extract into the.
So I guess my mother's trust is also had the same statute. So is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm getting at there is it's the statute is more or less just saying, hey, this is we're filing this in a compliance with this particular statute. The extract is being filed in compliance with that particular statute.
Okay. All right.
Yep. Sounds like you're in the right direction. Everything's where it should be.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Anytime.
Thank you for calling and listening to the show, Janet. Have a great weekend. We had Don send us a message from the app. He says, I'm a client since is an app member, so he's obviously downloaded the app, but he said, been a client since December. Now I have 3 children as clients as well. Wanted to give Cody and Ashley a shout out for helping him with the app. And he's working with one of my team member investment advisors, Nicholas. Thanks for the comments, Don. Okay, we've just got one more segment left. I'm going to try. I don't know. There's something that just prevents me to get these 7 topics in. So we're going to try our best to get these last 4 in and handle some callers if they call in. You're listening to Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO. It's a little too loud on the highway. I want to pull back in your driveway. It's way too quiet at my place. Want to come on over, come on. Welcome back to Winning at Life. You're listening to us on News Talk 99.5 WRNO, or you're doing so through the iHeartRadio app. We've just got this one more segment, and if you do have a question, it's 260-0995. If you're out of the area, it's 504-260-0995, or send me an email. Shelley, that I commented on, email earlier, and I don't know why I made this mistake. It's just mental error, and it's the only one I've had today. Woohoo! So that's good. But Shelly is a male, actually a pretty big fella, 6'4", 250 pounds. I wouldn't want to get on his bad side, so I kind of probably already have today. Sorry about that, because I referred to him as she, and I know him, so I don't know why I did that. Apologize for that once again. I wouldn't like that personally either, but all's good. Okay, we're going to try to get to these last four things regarding self-directed IRAs. It's kind of like my course I've been working on for clients, and now the phones are lighting up, so, but I'm going to continue. Here, we talked about UBIT. Number four is financing issues. Similar to UBIT, there's another tax called unrelated debt finance income, UDFI. Is what they refer to it as, a tax on IRA investment income derived from debt finance property proportionate to the debt on the property. All transaction must be at arm's length. We talked about that earlier in the show regarding trust. And IRA owner cannot in any way personal guarantee a loan made to an IRA. That would be prohibited event. And you know what prohibited means in IRA? It blows it up. One solution would be for the IRA to obtain a non-recourse loan, meaning no personal guarantee, and there are some companies that do this, but getting a non-recourse loan is often more difficult to obtain than other types of financing that a lender would offer more protection. Even if a non-recourse loan is obtained, any income generated by the IRA investment can trigger UDIF. Yep, that's right. An IRA or Roth cannot be the IRA owner, can actually owe tax and be responsible for filing the appropriate tax returns to report the income. Okay, two more callers here. So we're going to start with Joe in Mandeville. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. We have a family limited partnership, multiple partners. My question is, would the sale of one or more of those equities from one equity holder to another be an income taxable reportable item?
Wes, limited partnerships being sold. Who's it being sold to? Is it interest to other partners?
Yes, let's say there's just three partners, and one elects to take out another or the other two. Would there be a need to report that to the IRS?
It would certainly seem so on its face. I'm not aware of anything. That doesn't mean it doesn't exist, but I'm not aware of anything that would allow you to get around that reporting requirement.
How is income reported from the partnerships at this time?
It's a standalone. It has its own IRS number.
Yeah, there's going to be some sort of filing and reporting regarding that transaction, and those receiving the buyouts are going to have responsibility to report that. Whether it's taxable or not, it's not for me to determine, but I'm pretty much going to assume there's going to be reporting, and you need to talk with your CPA or reach out to ours, Jude Heath, as well, and get some help on that, because you don't want to misstep there. Uncle Sam punishes us harshly for messing up.
I enjoy your message each day.
Okay. Thank you for listening, Joe.
Right on.
And the
Bye.
Call. Have a great weekend. And John from Gretna, welcome to Winning at Life.
I have a question about widowers' benefit, Social Security benefit.
Okay.
Now, I understand ideally when you reach the full retirement age, you compare the two and you select the one which is the highest, and you go with that forward. My question is, I understand if you start drawing a widower's benefit early, say at age 62, the actual benefit is greatly reduced.
Correct.
Because drawing early, and also there's some income restrictions too. But set that aside. So it's reduced if I draw early, but will that benefit go up as time goes forward until I reach retirement age, and then the widower's benefit will be as it is supposed to be at full retirement, or does it remain at the reduced benefit going forward without any increases?
Okay, so you're talking about it starting early,
yes,
having a reduction, then
yes,
switching to your benefit.
Well, what I'm talking about is drawing the widower's benefit early, which would be a reduction because of doing it early. If I should wait until I'm full retirement age, then, you know, I can select, both benefits, whichever is the highest, that's the one I would go with. But if I choose to draw early, is that a reduced amount? Would that reduced amount increase over time until I reach retirement age?
Okay, let's see. How much time do I have here? I have a few minutes. I've got two sections here I'm going to refer to. If the spouse has not yet started receiving Social Security benefits when the spouse dies, you may apply for survivor benefits as early as age 60.
Right.
Applying between ages 50 and could early as 50 if there is a disability benefit.
That doesn't apply to me.
If applies between 60 and 66, you'll receive anywhere from 71.5 to 100%. So at 60 is your biggest hit. That hit reduces. A special exception exists if caring for a child's worker under 16.
And they don't apply.
Or disabled. In that case, may receive 100. If the beneficiary starts between 60 and 66 and has a long life expectancy, it may not be prudent to claim a survivor benefit immediately after the spouse's death. If you have other income, you may be able to wait until full retirement age in order to avoid the actuarial reduction. Or if you need the money, you can take the benefits on your own record and then switch to the survivor's benefit at FRA. Then you'll have more income later on. So it depends on which way you do this. If we can.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good, I understand. So I can, if I want to retire at age 62, I can use my benefit, which would be greatly reduced, and save the spousal survivor benefit till age 66 or longer, and then switch over, and I'll be able to draw the full amount of the spousal and
Exactly. That's why I kind of wanted to read that to you.
So I was thinking about reverse order, like draw my survivor benefit first and then switch. But if I do that, then my spousal benefit be greatly reduced and it won't be adjusted going forward. It would stay
correct
at that amount no matter what.
Yeah, that's usually the mistake, is not looking at it both ways and then turning on the one that's going to have the reduction and affect you thereafter.
And let me review just real quick. The preferred method is, if I want to retire early, say age 62, use my Social Security benefit when I reach age 66 and some change, then switch from mine and go with the spousal survivor benefit, which would be the greater one. And that would be a going forward from age 66.
Right. Let's see, a couple numbers here. If we compare the 71.5 and the full 100% benefits, assuming the 2,000 primary insurance amount and 2.8 COLA, the annual income at various ages would be much larger. That is the way to go. Now,
okay,
ultimately, you want to run the calculations out both ways, but putting out the spousal gets you more money.
You would be available for a consultation at a fee on if I decide to do something like that and just go over the details?
Yeah, look, we'll have a conversation. I don't know that we'll charge you anything. We'll have a conversation. You need help, you call my office. We'll get you the information, and we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you very much, Gregory. I'll be sure to do that.
Okay, John. Good luck on that. Thanks for the call. Look forward to hearing from you during the week. So you can thank you, John. You can do like John did and call the show at 504-260-0995. Now we know what John's going to do. He's going to call my office for some more help. hey, we don't never charge a fee until somebody says, I want to become a client, start working together. And then, you know, in our first meeting, we're going to cover what the fees, so they know what it's going to be on down the road if they elect to start going forward with it. But you can do what John's going to do and call my office at 504-832-9200 and get some help. Remember, next week, July 13th, we have a live event. Going to get to see me live. The Total Wealth Authority, Wes Blanchard's going to be there. Break some bread, $10 fee to attend. Bruce, Chris, and Metairie, call the office to RSVP. That number is 504-832-9200. Look forward to seeing you. You're next going to hear me on the Daily Wrap Monday at 7. This has been Winning at Life on News Talk 99.5 WRNO.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without express consent by Gregory Ricks is prohibited.